much. Paul, what have we learned from this crisis to make the next one less likely or less severe?
How long, you
might tell us about your work in the Congress to try and plug some of those gaps, which it, with the vocal rule have at least been partially successful.
Let me remind you that you told me I come here, we're going to have fun.
Yeah, this is fun.
So I want to go back to your previous question.
Good. You can answer any of my questions.
Well, I want to implicitly criticize you. You were suggesting macroeconomists have some shortcomings in looking at normal distribution curves. Macroeconomists have lots of shortcomings. They've been studying macroeconomics for 70 years and still can't predict the ups and downs of the business cycle. But that's pretty well understood. But the problem that you kind of alluded to with these fat tails, I think, is one of financial engineering, not macroeconomics. When, for some reason or another, people began getting the idea that very sophisticated mathematicians and physicists and engineers could study financial markets and they could find returning patterns of behavior in financial markets that implicitly or explicitly followed a normal distribution curve, because if you're a physicist or a mathematician, that's all you know. Everything looks like a normal distribution curve. But the fact that it's a kind of a mistake in analyzing financial markets, because financial markets are not a physical phenomenon, they're a human phenomenon. And they react today to what happened yesterday, or what happened 2 minutes ago, and they go to extremes all the time. And this idea of fat tails suggests they follow a normal pattern. If we only could discern the normal pattern, we know about it. But since there are no normal patterns out there, you're not going to find out. These fat tails are only supposed to happen every 20 years, or every 100 years, happen every 20 years. But you never know. So we got a major problem. And and it goes to, I think, the question of financial reform. I was at a meeting with some infrastructure people and some engineers a while ago, and one of the engineers was just bemoaning that all his best students were going, you know, good, solid, civil engineers and chemical engineers, they were all going into Wall Street, presumably to produce a very productive occupation. And same thing happened to be in Washington. He said, you know that new bridge we're building over the Potomac? It costs three times what it should cost. It doesn't handle the traffic very well, and it looks ugly. And I concluded from this conversation, the trouble with the United States recently is we have the worst of both worlds. We've got lousy engineers and lousy bridges and a lousy financial market, as the engineers went to the financial market. So now I've gotten that off my chest. Now, what do you want me?
Well, I'm going to
reform it.
Let me just follow up because you suggested a question to the whole panel, and that is: have we overdone finance?
Yeah, obviously.
And is finance too big a share? Has it become too large a share of the U.S. economy and the global economy?
Look, well, first of all, you know all the money made in finance is way out of proportion with what it was historically, and way out of proportion with other industries. And if you look at calculations of value added in the U.S. GDP, and I don't remember the exact dates, but the order of magnitude is correct. 15 years ago, financial world accounted for X, roughly 5%, I think. Then it got up to 10%. And, you know, it's called value added. Was the economy operating any better? I mean, not discernibly. In fact, it was growing no faster than it was before. People were reasonably happy, but it wasn't growing any faster than the basic trend in the past, and it ended up with a big collapse. Interestingly, the figure I gave you for value added is in nominal terms. When the economists adjusted it for what they perceived to be changes in prices, there was no added contribution to the value, no added value added from the financial sector to the GDP in real terms. And I suspect that, I don't know how they calculate it, but that's, I suspect, a correct conclusion. But in nominal terms, we had this explosion. And I've told this story, but I got the platform.
You got the floor.
some years ago, I was at a conference and happened to be in Europe to make any difference. Basically, chief executive officers, and I don't know, I was on a panel. I don't know why I was there to make any difference. I found myself sitting next to one of the founders of financial engineering, who I did not know, but I knew who he was. I knew he'd won a Nobel Prize or two. And there was some young guy up in the program and explaining to these chief executive officers that they better learn about financial engineering. Because if they didn't know swaps and swaptions and, you know, all the other apparatus of financial engineering, their firms are going to be dead in the 21st century because you had to catch up with them. So I nudged this guy who I didn't know, I didn't know who he was. I whispered in his ear, I said, all this financial engineering, what's it do to the economy? What's it do for productivity? And he leaned over and whispered in my ear one word that I wasn't expecting. He whispered in my ear, nothing. I said, what does it do? He says, it moves around the rents in the financial markets, and intellectually it's a lot of fun. Now, the fact of the matter is, I think he was wrong. It increased the rents in the financial market. That's what's demonstrated, I think, by all this income that's been created. And it's given us a rather fragile base for economic reform. Now, that's all the basis for my lecture on how.
I think we're all being enlightened.
I don't know whether you're...
We're all being enlightened.
We're struggling with reform. We're maybe halfway there. And we've got a lot of problems in making it consistent internationally and all the rest. But I do think that the financial system is basic in the world, basic in any economy, basic in globalization. But among the financial institutions, I still take the view, an old-fashioned view, that banks are particularly important. That banks are charged with certain responsibilities for the payment system, for providing liquidity, safe place for funds, and major suppliers of credit, particularly for small and medium-sized businesses. And they're protected. I mean, that's generally recognized. They've been corrected forever by almost all countries. Today, with all this new financial technique, there's an awful lot of emphasis on trading. And some trading, you know, good active markets are not a bad thing, they're a good thing, but they also lend themselves to a lot of speculative activity and a lot of instability. So my view is we ought to work toward a system that protects the banks, as they always have, but we've got to inject more risk into the system to deal with this too-big-to-fail phenomenon. And that's easier to do outside the banking system, I think, than inside. But we do have, I think, a general consensus on the idea of some kind of resolution authority. Now, how that gets done, you know, it's wonderful to describe verbally. To get it done and to get it credible is a problem. But the general idea is to have a very speedy bankruptcy process. If a financial firm fails, the government takes it over, it satisfies its immediate demands for continuity, but basically it liquidates the organization. And the stockholders are gone, the management's gone, and the institution is gone, and the creditors are at risk. Now,